It's 7:43. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. On this West Virginia morning, the critical and time-intensive role of contact tracing.
So when you have to call their household contacts and see who they've been in contact with and where have they traveled and who do they work with, when was the last time they were in the office, what day did they get symptomatic?
We'll explore how some counties are preparing. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. With West Virginia in the process of reopening its economy, Governor Jim Justice and public health officials have called for more personal protective equipment, or PPE, increased testing, and the ramping up of contact tracing. Contact tracing is basically tracking an infected person's movement and contact with others so that public health experts know who else might have been exposed. But how are public officials in the state addressing those efforts, and why is contact tracing now coming into focus? Dave Mistich brings us this report.
Contact tracing is an important part of making sure highly contagious diseases like the coronavirus don't spread. That's because the practice helps tell people whether they've come in contact with an infected person, which in turn can help guide treatments and reduce further exposure. But in recent years, local health departments have seen their budgets cut, and so many don't have the staff to facilitate the sudden and increased need for contact tracing.
We've actually employed extra people, and we've had help from the National Guard.
Dr. Sherry Young is the health officer and executive director for the Kanawha-Charleston Health Department.
We've had help from the county employees. We've had our own internal staff retrained to do this contact tracing. So at any given point in time, we have about 10 to 15 staff dedicated directly to contact tracing.
KCHD is one of the bigger health departments in the state. According to the Department of Health and Human Resources, nearly half of West Virginia's county health departments have less than 5 full-time employees. And that's a problem. As Governor Jim Justice began to roll out the state's plan to reopen, State Health Officer Dr. Kathy Slimp said she anticipates West Virginia needing about 270 to 300 people to conduct contact tracing. She said that's based on modeling that calls for 15 contact tracers for every 100,000 residents. But many local health departments in West Virginia don't have enough resources to handle the needs within their communities. So West Virginia University's School of Public Health is partnering with the DHHR to create a training program to get more contact tracers in place. Dr. Christopher Martin is one of the professors leading the program.
This is something that anyone with the right interpersonal skill set and motivation, we can train them to do this.
Martin says the guidance from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention indicates that no experience in public health is needed to learn how to do contact tracing. So he and others have created an online program that will take 14 to 16 hours. He says they're targeting 3 broad groups.
One group will be students taking this as a 3-credit course based in our School of Public Health. Those will be senior undergraduate public health majors and graduate students in public health and related fields. That course is set to run as a 3-week offering starting on May 18th, but that's not quick enough to meet the need. So we're targeting 2 additional groups.
Another of those targeted groups is already licensed health professionals and students who need additional clinical hours to complete their degrees. Martin says that group will be able to benefit from the training by receiving clinical hours they might have lost access to because of the pandemic. And a third group, Martin says, is made up of concerned members of the public who have expressed an interest in volunteering their time.
My inbox has been flooded with emails, but they're very edifying emails from people in communities who say, look, I'm retired, I'm available, or I'm at home with kids, and I want to do my part to help our state's response.
Martin says those who complete the training will be placed in the field with the National Guard or local health departments for about 40 hours of practical experience. But even though the state is ramping up these efforts, some major challenges do exist.
I think what you're going to find for both the safety of the contact tracers as well as those individuals who are out, who maybe we may be tracing, that a lot of this work will be done remotely.
That's Dr. Rahul Gupta. He's the Senior Vice President and Chief Health Officer for the March of Dimes. He also served as West Virginia's Public Health Commissioner under 2 administrations.
The challenge of remote work, of course, is you are totally dependent on the other person's other side's ability to pick up the phone, or they may not be in a position to pick up the phone, especially they're home alone and really sick or somewhere else. And so we may actually have a lot of unknowns rather than being able to track people down.
With more than 180 cases reported in Kanawha County from at least 40 clusters of community spread, Dr. Young with the Kanawha-Charleston Health Department says the work of contact tracing will be time-consuming and resource-intensive.
But when you have to call their household contacts and see who they've been in contact with and where have they traveled and who do they work with, when was the last time they were in the office, what day did they get symptomatic, the contact tracing piece gets very in-depth as far as what we need to know to help keep people around them safe.
Dr. Christopher Martin of WVU's School of Public Health says gaps in resources like contact tracing come as no surprise.
And there's something that we call the paradox in public health, which is that we only care about public health after there have been failures of public health, as we see before us now. And the countries that have responded very effectively, when you look at those countries, what they have in common is a past failure.
The DHHR says they are working with regional epidemiologists to deploy additional contact tracing staff to the counties that need it based on the number of cases and already available staff. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. It's 7:49. Across West Virginia today, it's going to be mostly cloudy. There's a chance of showers across northern parts of the states and the higher elevations to the east, and high temperatures today will be in the mid-40s to the mid-50s. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers across northern parts of West Virginia. Lows tonight will be in the 30s. Tomorrow, becoming mostly sunny with highs in the 50s. And for Wednesday, variable cloudiness with highs in the 60s. As states across the country, including West Virginia, begin to reopen non-essential businesses, as we just heard, public health experts say understanding who has the virus and who has been exposed is key to preventing future outbreaks. Some healthcare workers in West Virginia are part of a study aiming to do just that. Brittany Patterson has more.
On a normal day, Curtis Ash knows his job can be stressful. He's a nursing manager in the emergency department at Ruby Memorial Hospital in Morgantown. But throw a global pandemic into the mix.
It's been an eye-opener to the levels of stress that we face daily.
Ash is one of about 150 frontline healthcare workers in West Virginia participating in a national study measuring the stress and other physiological changes these workers experience. Data such as heart rate, sleep patterns, oxygen levels, and pulse are collected by a smart ring.
The ring looks similar to what a wedding band would look like.
Participants also do twice daily motor tests using a phone app. All of this data is fed into an artificial intelligence computer model developed by West Virginia University's Rockefeller Neuroscience Institute. The information will be used to determine which healthcare workers may be infected, even before they begin showing symptoms, says Ali Razai, the chair of the institute.
Putting it all together in a machine learning framework, we're able to predict the onset of symptoms from the virus.
He says these monitoring rings, coupled with the data processed by the AI computer model, together are almost like their own type of personal protective equipment. It can't help prevent someone from getting COVID-19, but in the same way that gloves and masks can help protect healthcare workers from being exposed, the data can help prevent the spread of COVID-19 between other workers and to patients.
So we're looking at a way that we can help have an earlier way to detect if somebody is contagious with the COVID-19 virus, but is not symptomatic.
Razai and others involved in the study say currently their AI models can predict when someone has the virus 24 hours before they show symptoms, and they're hoping to get it up to 3 days before. For Donna Tennant, admissions marketing director at Sundale Nursing Home, participating in the study gives her a little bit of comfort.
It's comforting to know because, you know, we're working here in it. I mean, we're working it every day. You know, being able to see your levels like that and what's happening, it gives you a little bit I think a comfort knowing that, you know, yes, I'm okay right now.
Sundale, where Tenet works, was home to one of the first major outbreaks of the coronavirus in West Virginia. Dozens of residents and staff have tested positive for the virus. Six have died, according to data from the State Department of Health and Human Resources. Tenet says contributing to this research helps make her work even more meaningful during this stressful time. Researchers hope to expand the study to 1,000 healthcare workers across the country and hope eventually to expand the project to help other frontline workers. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brittany Patterson in Morgantown.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health and Charleston Area Medical Center. Many families have turned to video conferencing apps like Zoom and Skype to keep in touch with their loved ones during the coronavirus pandemic. Reporter Eric Douglas brings us a story about how you can use that online chatter to serve a higher purpose, to capture family oral histories.
We left off. You were living in Davis Creek, and you were probably about middle or junior high.
We were about 9 or 10 when I moved over there.
Okay. What do you remember about that period?
Like I say, I made a note. We thought we were in the country. We thought we were out in the middle of nowhere.
That's actually my mom, Lois Douglas. I recorded that in person. She's been staying with me since the pandemic took off. To pass the time, I've been having her recount some of her earlier memories.
By then, I had been working at Purity Baking Company. You know, they baked the bread there, they made the cakes there, and everything else. It came down the conveyor line, the breads were hot, and you had to get a flat box and put a loaf of bread in it and carry it that way. If you tried to carry it in your hand, it smushed down to nothing.
Mom was talking about her first job after high school graduation. But this got me thinking that a lot of people could be doing the same thing remotely. Before I ever got started working in radio, I recorded more than 150 oral histories with everyone from family members to World War II veterans. At its simplest, an oral history is a recording of memories. Stan Bumgardner is the editor of Golden Seal magazine. He says oral histories have a way of capturing people's emotions that are attached to a memory.
If it was an important event in your life, you certainly remember how it made you feel. You remember how it affected the people around you, and that's from, you know, good to awful to funny to tragic.
If you are using software like Zoom or FaceTime to keep in touch with family, there's no reason you can't record the conversation. As long as everyone agrees, of course. In fact, a lot of video and audio chat options allow you to record directly through the program. Just try asking a few simple, open-ended questions, says Francine Kirk. She's the interim director at the Frank and Jane Gabor West Virginia Folklife Center in Fairmont. She says if you want to know more or need clarification on what they're telling you, try repeating the last couple words.
So when my grandmother said, I sat there in all those wet underwear, I said, wet underwear? And you just make it sound like a question. And then she launched on what she wore to school.
But aside from having those memories and voices recorded, Kirk thinks there's another benefit.
Well, I think it's about figuring out who you are and why you are who you are.
For Bumgardner, oral histories are great at capturing sensory experiences.
People can remember their grandmother baking an apple pie, and they don't have the recipe for it, and they have no clue how to make it themselves, but they know exactly 50 years later what it smelled like when it was baking and how it tasted and how it made them feel when they ate it.
When recording an oral history, the best thing you can do as a listener is to be quiet, Bumgardner says.
And especially with elderly people, sometimes they'll kind of, you know, they'll have to fumble around for a memory for a few minutes, and you just want to jump in and help them, and all you're doing is kind of shutting them up.
Once you record those family stories, you'll have them forever. The sound of your loved one's voice is just a click away. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Eric Douglas in Charleston.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day at our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Caitlin Tan, Jessica Lilly, Kara Lofton, Liz McCormick, Dave Mistich, Eric Douglas, Corey Nollinger, Emily Allen, and Roxy Todd. Brittany Patterson produces our show. Our news director is Glennis Board. I'm Chuck Anzalevich.